Okay, we're good.
Good afternoon, everybody. At this time, I would like to call the Planning Commission workshop to order. And first thing we need to do is determine if we have a quorum. And in fact, we do have a quorum. There are four commissioners present. Adoption of agenda. Do I have a motion to adopt tonight's agenda?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The agenda has been adopted. Visitor communication. This is the time provided for individuals wishing to address the Planning Commission regarding issues not already on the agenda. Is there anyone here that would like to address the commission? Is there anybody online?
I just see our legal counsel, so I think we're good.
Okay, given none of that, we will move on to the workshop. Tonight's feature is Garrett teaching us about ethics.
So I'll just introduce it real quick. Scott Woodford. This is some training that we typically do, try to do annually, just to keep everybody up to speed and out of trouble. We do also training with new members. So there's some issues that we do touch on during that time. But there's some nuances there. And I'm sure you've had some experiences that you have had out in the community with certain issues that this is a great time to ask our legal attorney or legal counsel on how to react in certain situations where a member of the public might come up and ask you about a current application, you know, ex parte communication or things of that nature. So we've asked Garrett to do a little primer on that for you guys. And he's going to go through some of that. And we've also going to leave some time for questions you guys might have. So think of different scenarios that you might have encountered that you want to ask Garrett. So without further ado, welcome Garrett. Go ahead and take it away.
Thanks, Scott. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Good. Sorry, I'm using a little bit of bootstrap technology here today, so there might. Including right now while I'm trying to share my screen. One second here.
Good. Good. It was worth coming just for that. Now, let me do that.
Recruitment tech.
Yeah. Yes. There will be food. Now's a good time to get them, get some, because we're kind of at a lull.
Garrett, would it help if I made you a co-host?
No, it's the connection here. So I might have to just not share the slides I'm trying to share and just talk to you through them. All right, I'm going to give it one more shot. And if not, that's what I'll do.
Garrett, if you want to email it over, we might be able to do it on our end.
Yeah.
You what? Where is he?
Yeah. No, where's Garrett?
He's in band.
Oh. Yeah.
Todd or Matt, do you know if we're having a meeting the first meeting in March?
All right. Sorry, it's on my end. It's not on your Zoom. So I'm just going to plow forward. And if it happens to work, I'll bring it up. But in general, what I'm going to go over is kind of the structure and purpose of the Planning Commission, how to go about rendering decisions, and some of the ethical things that come up in the performance of your duties, not only during hearings, during meetings, but also extra curriculars. So the Planning Commission is formed for a variety of purposes. The first is that the city's comprehensive plan calls for a citizen input committee. And that is one of the functions that the Planning Commission performs, is that it is the body of citizens that advises the city on various land use matters and implementation of the comprehensive plan. It then has some additional responsibilities assigned to it through the development code to process various types of applications. And between those types of applications, there's basically two primary types. There's legislative decisions, which are those dealing with the text and of both the comprehensive plan and the development code. And then there's quasi-judicial decisions, which are when you're rendering a decision on a particular application. And there's competing rules for both of those that we'll hit here in a second. But the first thing I want to kind of go over is the roles and responsibilities of the commission. So a primary function of the planning commissioner is to sit on this body that makes recommendations, that decides decisions, acts in a judicial capacity on individual applications. And as part of that role, what you need to be mindful of, particularly in the quasi-judicial context, is that you are supposed to be a neutral decision maker. You're supposed to be an informed decision maker. And then you need to be the party that implements at least portions of the procedures required for these types of decisions. Now, what a neutral decision maker means is that you do not have a conflict of interest. You do not have a bias, and that you also do not have communications that have occurred outside of the judicial the quasi-judicial process, the hearing. And we'll go through some of those. So the conflict of interest, that doesn't mean that you are absolutely free of conflicts. What that necessarily means is that you don't have a financial interest, either you or an immediate family member, in the outcome of an application, or that you don't have a relationship directly with the applicant. It doesn't mean that you're friends with the applicant. It doesn't mean that you don't go to the same church or in the same social club as an applicant. It literally means that you are going to be, you're going to stand to benefit, or your family is going to stand to benefit from a decision that's going to be for you. And so it's not a perception of bias. It's an actual bias, or sorry, actual conflict standard. But it's ultimately up to you whether or not you're going to participate. And so if it's a close enough call that you just don't feel comfortable, it's perfectly fine, as long as we could still maintain a quorum to sit out. What the neutral refers to is that you don't have any bias, and you have bias because either you have made up your mind about the application before it's been submitted, or that you've acted in a manner that is hostile to one or more of the parties before the proceedings. And that can play out in the form of, you know, having said comments in the public of, you know, I don't like this applicant. I don't like this particular project. I will never agree to these types of developments, things along those lines. You know, it doesn't mean more general statements that you might have said, such as, I have concerns about growth or something along those natures. But if it's particularized to an application, then you likely have committed bias, and that could result in you having to recuse yourself. So are there any questions on that? Because I know you guys run into a lot of scenarios about when you need to recuse yourselves.
Nope.
Okay.
Not seeing any at this point. Jump in anytime though.
Okay. Sure. And then ex parte communications. So ex parte communications, unlike bias or conflict of interest, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have to recuse yourself. It may mean that you have to recuse yourself, but really what the significance of the ex parte communications are is that it could taint the decision overall. And what I mean by an ex parte communication is a communication that's occurred outside of the hearing process, whether you talked to a party about the application when you saw them on the street, whether you've independently had gone and researched aspects of the application or the applicant or a party or something that was said, and thus you're looking at information that's not on the record. Though those understandably occur, people, you know, will stop you periodically and ask to talk about things. And again, that's not going to necessarily recuse or require recusal, but what it does require is disclosure. And failure to disclose any of those contacts, like I said, could ultimately jeopardize the decision if it turns out that the decision was made based on facts and communications outside of the record rather than what is in the record, and thus everybody was aware of and had an opportunity to refute. So when you conduct a quasi-judicial application, as you know, at the start of the hearing, you're going to have to disclose what all of those conflicts of interest, biases, and ex parte communications. And then people are going to have to be offered an opportunity to challenge not only your disclosure, but then also your participation.
Garrett, could you kind of speak a little bit to how we might distinguish like a type four legislative application versus a quasi judicial in terms of how conflicts and bias and ex parte communication apply in those instances.
Yeah. So in as of up to right now, I've been speaking in the quasi judicial context. In the legislative context, the only thing that has to be disclosed and really the only thing that has to be that could call for recusal is conflict of interest. In the legislative process, you know, it's understood that we're talking about policies and we're having citizens participate in those policies. So it's a more open process than the quasi-judicial, which is, you know, what the name implies is it's a, you're acting as if you were a judge. And so you have to be more neutral. So you can have a strong position on a legislative proposal, whereas you couldn't, and you'd be open about it, whereas you couldn't necessarily do the same thing about a quasi-judicial development application.
So the conflict provision still applies if it's legislative, if you have a direct financial benefit or family member who does. Is that correct?
Correct. And again, it has to be particularized. You know, if we were looking at legislation dealing with short-term rentals and you owned a short-term rental, that's obviously a direct conflict of interest. If we were talking about changing the setbacks to the residential zone, just because you own a home in the residential zone, probably not, because that's so generalized to basically everybody in the town. It may implicate your property values in some degree, but you're in such a broad class, it's probably not going to rise to the level of conflict of interest.
Do you guys all have the difference between legislative and quasi-judicial in terms of what examples legislative is, like development code amendments or comprehensive plan amendments to change zoning? Those are the kind of the distinguishment between legislative and quasi-judicial.
Yeah. Sorry. Yes. Legislative is always dealing with broad policy topics that are implemented usually in writing in the form of the amendments to the comprehensive plan or development code. Quasi-judicial is a specific proposal or even a legislative act, but it's specific to, you know, a handful of properties as opposed to being generalized. So, you know, broad scale rezoning of the city might be legislative, but a zone change of two or three properties would be quasi-judicial. So going along with the ex parte communications aspect, a topic that Scott wanted me to hit on is deliberations outside of the record. And specifically what we're talking about is, you know, emailed communications amongst the commissioners. So emails to staff and legal counsel are not ex parte communications. That it's understood that you should be able to reach out for technical assistance. And based on the nature of the request, you know, staff and legal counsel have to decide how best to respond, whether we want to be on the record in the response or if it's something that, particularly if it's legal in nature, might not have to go on the record because it's privileged. But communications as amongst the commissioners is almost always going to be problematic in a quasi-judicial, and I would, of course, suggest that you even avoid it in a legislative context. because your deliberations have to be on the record. And furthermore, you run the risk of violating public meetings law by having sort of establishing a quorum via email, so to speak. So it's definitely best practices that if there is some issue that you want to have addressed, again, whether it's in a legislative or a quasi-judicial context, to probably send an email directly to staff and have staff resolve it, rather than sending out a group email and particularly responding to a group email, because again, you're creating communications outside the record, which could be problematic. And certainly if you're deliberating, that's very problematic.
So Garrett.
Yes.
What about just two people sitting down, two commissioners sitting down and talking about an application or any of the other?
Yeah, so I definitely would advise against it, because even though you're not a quorum, those are communications about the application. And so they are, even though they don't involve an applicant or, another party to the proceedings, they're nonetheless occurring outside of the record, because whether they're talking about the facts of the case or talking about what hasn't been addressed by the case, in either context, you're either deliberating or you're creating, you're creating communications that should be occurring in a public forum so that they can be evaluated and in certain cases, responded to.
So Garrett, can I give you an example of something?
Sure.
So just recently in the Nugget, there was an article in there about a piece of property out on Barkley that somebody wants to build a boutique RV RV park.
Mm-hmm.
So because it hasn't come before the planning commission. What you're saying is that I can't call Chris and say, what do you think about another RV park in town? Not as a fellow commissioner, just as a, like I would ask my neighbor the same thing. It hamstrings me from talking to somebody who's on the commission just because we're both on the commission, even though it hasn't come before us yet?
So in that particular context, it's not an ex parte communication because it's occurred before an application's been filed. And so no, that particular communication is, in the grand scheme of things, is probably not going to be too problematic. But again, I guess I would just question why you need to reach out when you know that it's a likely to become before you. Because if you do make up your mind and you do say something like, no, I wouldn't approve that, then you have bias, right? And that is, again, it's not saying that we're infringing on your First Amendment rights here, but you are potentially jeopardizing your ability to act as a commissioner on an application that might come before you on that.
I will respectfully disagree, but that's okay.
Well, I'm happy to hear you out. What is it that you disagree about?
I'm not an elected official. I'm an appointed. I don't swear an oath to the Constitution, and I'm just talking to another citizen. It's before anything even comes before me. And I'm just, I'd got to know Chris. And I've gotten to know other people in the community, and I would ask the same question. Whether I'm for it or against it, I haven't made up my mind. It hasn't come before us, so I'm just curious as why. I'm just curious. as to why that would be. I can understand that if we were meeting after the application had been made and I was sending her stuff and talking to her about it, I can understand there would be a problem there. But if we were just talking about land use laws in general in the state of Oregon, it sounds like I'd be hamstrung not to be able to talk to her about something that I read in the mail, in the news, or saw on television that had to do with upcoming legislation changes on land use law.
Well, now we're talking about at least three different things, but no, what I said is what's problematic is if you establish bias in your communications.
I hear you.
That's the problem here. I am nonetheless advising that, you know, when you recognize that it's a quasi-judicial application that is likely to come before you, you know, I'm just questioning why take the risk of discussing it, because the risk is that if you come out and say something that I don't like it, and that comes to light, then you are jeopardizing your ability to sit as a commissioner on that application in a quasi-judicial context.
No, I hear you. I've learned my lesson from last time. So
right. And then when you talked about Oregon land use in general, so then you're in the legislative context. And again, that kind of issue is not an issue in the legislative context. You can have opinions on policy. It's where the lines get really blurry, of course, is if your policy is, I think we should prohibit this type of use, you know, use X, whatever that is, and I would never, you come so far to establish that you would be biased for any individual application for use X that might come before you.
Sure, I understand.
Okay.
So Garrett, this might be a good time to kind of ask the question about, you know, the distinction between legislative amendments where they're broadly applied to many properties and some, sounds like not all of them are created equal. You know, we have an application before us for some changes to the tourist commercial zone, which only applies to three properties in town. So does that kind of cross the line into more site specific, and therefore maybe we need to adhere to the principles of the ex parte communication relative to that?
Yeah, so there's definitely not a bright line rule about when you cross over in terms of number of properties or number of acres or something quantifiable, but there is this general principle that the more specific it is to individuals, individual property owners, individual properties, then you're in the quasi-judicial realm, even if you would be doing what is otherwise normally a legislative act, such as amending the comprehensive plan or development code. And so, yes, probably out of an abundance of caution, I would say if it's close, then probably conduct yourselves in a manner more typical to quasi-judicial proceedings than legislative proceedings.
Okay. So just to let you know, we do have an application submitted for some legislative amendments to the tourist commercial zone. And you've read about it in the paper and you might hear from it from your neighbors. So I think what Garrett's saying is that treat it like a quasi-judicial application and just let folks know that there'll be a time and a process for that. And you'd like to preserve your opportunities to participate in that. So, or call, refer all the questions to staff. So good advice, I think.
Yeah, and that's also one of the points I wanted to hit is, you know, so what do you say when you nonetheless get approached? And I think Scott provided a, you know, the model answer, which is that this matter is likely to come before me or will become before me, and to avoid creating an issue that might lead to my recusal, you know, I don't want to discuss it at this time, but I'm happy to hear your thoughts at the proceeding. All right, another kind of related topic that Scott wanted me to hit on is commissioners acting in an individual capacity. And so what we're talking about here is, you know, if you individually wanted to, you know, testify before city council, or you individually want to show up to some community event, you know, that again, nothing prevents you from doing that. What the risk or the concern is always going to be is the way you participate going to jeopardize future participation as a commissioner on an application that deals with whatever it is you were communicating about. The other issue, so we kind of hit on that. The other related issue with that is representing the planning commission. So if you were to go testify before city council on something, you would of course need to identify that, hey, I am a planning commissioner, but I am not speaking for the planning commission, unless the planning commission has given you authority to do so. Finally, another topic on my list here is kind of the mechanics of the extended hearing. So as you guys all know, when we get to the end of public testimony, the applicant provides their rebuttal, staff makes kind of any final comments, then at that point, the Planning Commission can either close the hearing and move on to deliberations, continue the hearing, and there's a bunch of permutations of how exactly that plays out. So the first thing to note, of course, is that if any party to the proceedings requests in a quasi-judicial hearing that the record be left open, then the city has to grant that on an initial evidentiary hearing, which is what you guys conduct in quasi-judicial proceedings. So a decision won't, if someone does make that request, a decision won't be made that night. What will happen then is that the Planning Commission will have to decide whether, when they leave the record open, whether they're just leaving it open to written communications from the parties, or if they are going to carry over to another meeting to receive additional oral testimony. And logistically, remember that if you just flat out request grant a continuation for additional oral testimony, then that automatic 7-day request to leave the record open is still in play. So you can see how we can extend something on and on in that sort of circumstance. And keep in mind that the city has a 120-day obligation to process applications. And so extending out meetings can certainly eat up that clock. When you leave the record open just for written, it from a staff standpoint too, what it also allows for is, you know, allowing for a final decision to sort of get formulated so that it can be adopted at a hearing, or it can be adopted at a meeting, because it's out of convenience. It's nice to have something in writing that can be adopted at a, you know, at the end of the hearing, so it can go out, as opposed to having to push to yet another meeting to review, you know, revisions and that sort of thing. So it's really a timing issue. And so I just want to make everyone aware of the implications when that decision has to be made at the end of basically any hearing. Any questions on those mechanics?
So Garrett, are you saying then that for us to, it's best if we don't leave it open for oral testimony?
I wouldn't go that far, but what I am trying to communicate is that when you carry over a meeting for additional oral testimony, there is always the risk that there is going to be yet another meeting because somebody can request that the record remain open.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Yeah.
And so what might come off as a seemingly insignificant extension could be a, you know, 2-month ordeal.
Makes sense.
And half of the 120 day clock right there. So I think I've hit the list, Scott, unless there was anything else you wanted me to touch on. And of course, I'm happy to answer any additional questions on, well, really anything about ethics or conduct of hearings.
Yeah, I think you hit the items that I was hoping you would hit. So I would just leave it open to anybody to ask Garrett while we got them. Any questions of any sort that you can think of, take advantage of them here.
I've got nothing.
Come on, Tom. You got to have one more. Don't you?
I do. I'll write it.
Didn't want to say anything. Take away.
Rick, is your...
All right. Well, I got at least one other thing that I can talk about too, which is, you know, how I'm used when I do show up at hearings. I don't show up at all of them, just when... you know, Scott asked me to, and my personal philosophy is, you know, I'm not conducting the meeting. That's the responsibility of the chair. I'm there as a resource. I'm there to make sure things at least stay between the lines, but I'm not, you know, standing in for the chair. I don't normally jump in until, you know, asked a question or it's my designated time, just because I like to, defer to the chair to run the meeting. When it's a clear-cut answer, I'm happy to give it, and particularly when it's about procedure. When it's on substance, you know, what I'm always very cautious of when it's a gray matter, you know, a gray area, is not going on the record saying one thing and then having to defend a city decision that goes the other way. So you will, you may need to read between the lines sometimes in how I communicate when those types of questions get presented to me, where I will start speaking a little general. And of course, like we discussed earlier, if there are questions that require, you know, kind of legal opinion. I'm always happy to answer those through email or outside of the record, because again, that's privileged, and I don't want to push a position again that you know is in the gray area, particularly when I don't know which way the Planning Commission wants to go on that issue. So just kind of some interactive insight for your brains. But again, I'm always happy to answer the question one way or another. It's just when it's in a public forum, I just have to be a little more careful of how strongly I come out on the position.
Good?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you,
Garrett.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Sorry about the technical difficulties, but thanks for letting me speak. And again, always happy to follow up with these answers to these kinds of questions.
Appreciate you being here. Thank you, Garrett.
Okay. Bye. Take care, guys. Bye.
We're pretty lively.
That's a pretty lively subject.
Yeah.
Especially staring at that.
Yeah. Too bad we couldn't see his presentation. I'm sure that would have been a lot more lively just to see those words up on the screen, right? No, it's kind of dry, but it's important stuff, right? And it's good to be reminded. And
it's also nice to still be a follower.
A follower?
Well, I mean, as far as like procedure goes.
Oh, right.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. And we're here to try to help keep you in line. And again, if you have any questions on anything, just talk to any one of us and we'll get you the answers. And so I don't know if you want to go to staff comments or commissioner comments now. Or...
No, I think we'll just sit here.
Okay. You want to keep soaking it in?
Soaking it in. Yes, we can go to staff comments.
All right. Some were inquiring about our upcoming meeting agendas. So if you want to mark down on your calendars, we know kind of through March tentatively what's going to occur. And we will be having a work session on March 7th, 4:00. And then we are planning to also to have a public hearing on March 21st. As it stands now, the work session would be on the tourist commercial text amendments, and then the public hearing would be on the tourist commercial text amendments, assuming that it's ready to go. And the Planning Commission provides the direction for staff and doesn't we don't see the need for additional work sessions before we schedule a public hearing.
Right, and confirming with the applicant and their team that they're available on the 21st. That's the one out.
Is that 5:30? 21st?
Correct.
So Tom, I don't know if you got those dates you inquired about that. So, yeah. Okay.
I have a question. Yes. Just, we already have tourist commercial, and that's something that exists today.
Correct.
And can you give me an example of that? Like something that's in Sisters that's tourist commercial?
Well, we can cover that in detail at the work session, sure.
For an example, I won't ask any more questions.
Well, it's a unique district in town. It encompasses one whole property and then portions of only two others.
Oh, okay.
It's over here at the corner of Barclay and Camp Polk. It's commonly referred to as the Conklin House property.
Yeah, and that's already tourist commercial?
Correct. Yeah, and so the purpose was to provide a variety of uses that are oriented to that tourist economy, and currently includes uses like cabins, restaurants, other kind of those associated type of uses. And so that's where they're proposing to make some changes. One of the prominent aspects of the proposed changes is to consider allowing an RV park as one of those allowed uses.
Oh, okay, great. All right, thank you. That's I don't want to make you relive the future.
Well, I acknowledge that you're not going to be here. And just wanted to.
No, that's great. Okay. Thank you.
Why does it only encompass 1.5 properties? Why do we have a special zone for 1.5 properties instead of fitting them in where everybody else is? Just
City Council adopted an ordinance that established that zone as part of the broader Sun Ranch development that extends through the business park area. So it was a larger holding that involved several zone changes, and that was just a
kind of driven by Sun Ranch and that whole
applicant initiated proposal. Yeah. So more of a, I'm going to use the term master plan, but a kind of a, but that means something more specific, but it was kind of a broader kind of look at various uses and zones and districts for those intended kind of development options.
Great. Thank you.
I have a question. Usually we get the information on all our stuff a week before our meeting. Is there any possibility of getting it farther out than a week before our meeting? You know, that some of the stuff we had to read last year was 300 pages of, that's a lot of reading in a week for me.
We could certainly do my best. And so I'm working on developing a website with all of the application information and the record, so we can make that, direct you to that. So that's certainly available for review at any point. The tricky part, I guess, in any staff report that's comes out before a public hearing is just the timeline between that work session is 2 weeks prior and just trying to craft that appropriately.
No, I know
that to you.
Yeah.
So it's to the sequencing of meetings and other projects, but I will effort to get it out more timely.
So that's why we also do work sessions, on larger items. I think maybe you're referring to some of those master plans that came through.
It was the fresh water and the
water and the wastewater
plans,
we try to get those out, at least in a work session format, even earlier than the public hearing, so you have a little time to digest it. But yeah, we're trying to get better at, creating some project websites for big applications that, has information on that you could start reviewing at an earlier time. So,
because you guys are going through, as we grow, your department has to grow. You need more people to do more things.
We're just going to get more efficient and less, more work time, less sleep.
Yeah.
At some point down the road, you're right. That'll happen, but I don't think we're there yet.
No, but that's just part of, we're not, as a city, we're not very old. I mean, as a city, we're old, but as a incorporated boomtown, 20 years ago, we were still pretty small.
Right. Exactly.
Which makes the planning department pretty small, probably 20 years ago.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Does having 6 commissioners change our quorum?
No, we still need a minimum of 4. Like a majority. Yeah. And so we'll get to that in a sec. Yeah, that's okay. We just wanted to update you guys that we're still working on the development code amendments that you've seen, and including short-term rentals and defensible space and building hardening. We just had a meeting last night with the council trying to further hone in on what their direction is in terms of what they want to see as far as changes. And they're still needing some additional time to do that. We're going to go back March 13th.
Correct.
That was the date to give them some more time, and we're going to give them some code language to react to. And once they get that kind of final direction, we'll circle back with you guys on that. But those things are continuing to move forward. Let's see. We did get a proposal in for the Urban Growth Boundary Amendment consultant. I just got one in. So won't be an evaluation. It'll just be kind of more of a confirmation whether that group actually meets the requirements to be able to do the work. And it's MIG, APG, that Matt Hasty and his group that have done a lot of work for us. They were the sole consultant to apply for that. So most likely they're qualified.
They did the Bend. Did they do the Bend Urban Growth Boundary expansion?
I know portions of their team were involved in the project. I don't know who the umbrella consulting group was, but they were part of the team.
And then you guys probably are aware, but this is Ms. Converse's last meeting as a planning commissioner. Maybe you didn't get that memo, Tom, when you were
did
gone.
Not but... get the memo. I'm moving back to Tahoe.
You promised this last meeting that was going to be your last one, though.
No, no, no. I said I was going to show up. I didn't know I was going to have to run it.
You're moving back to Tahoe? Really?
Yeah, I really am.
Oh, wow.
That's a true story.
Wow. Well, so we can talk.
Yeah. Now you can start talking to me all the time. It's a good thing Garrett. Oh, Garrett. Look at Garrett still shows up there. He's listening. Tom, call me anytime. I'll give you my opinions.
this is the time where we thank Chris for her service. 8 years, 17, starting 17 or eight, I,
no gold watch.
We got a nice little plaque here. Oh, there, nice little certificate.
Oh,
she can hang up on her wall down in her new house down there. And remind herself of all the glory years on
the glory years on the planning commission.
So. I just personally wanted to thank you for making my introduction to Sisters much more smooth and enjoyable. And you've always been here with your knowledge and your sense of humor and making it fun for everyone and for us to work with you. And we appreciate your time. And then Jeff, he usually drafts something up for folks, and he couldn't be here. He was hoping to read it to you. Directly, but he asked if I read it, if he couldn't make it. And so I'm going to read that into the record. So here we go. You might want to get the tissues handy. Just this is from Jeff, our chair. Says, I'd like to take a moment to recognize Chris Converse for her contribution to the Planning Commission and to the City of Sisters. Chris has served as a planning commissioner and vice chair since 2017 and has participated in countless impactful land use hearings and development code updates. I remember reading about her appointment in the Nugget where she said, quote, I actually enjoy reading code, quote. I knew right then we had a solid commissioner coming on board. Chris is a Sisters institution. As a longtime resident who is passionate about the city, she has always been a staunch supporter of the citizenry. She has been integral in the transformation of our little town and has seen more change than most. Chris's greatest strength is her ability to listen and then apply a commonsensical approach to the issues at hand. This always resulted with the best decision being made for the city. More than a few times, I found myself listening to her wisdom, causing me to question and even change my position. Her embrace of the long-term outlook of the decisions facing the commission and how they may impact the city was a welcomed and valuable perspective. As vice chair, Chris brought strong leadership to the Planning Commission and did a commendable job of leading hearings and work sessions in my absence. She also provided me with guidance, support, and occasionally a much-needed shoulder to cry on. Chris, I commend you on your work with the city and the commission and for your contribution to the citizens, both present and future. The city is lucky to have had you as a volunteer, and we're so grateful for your contribution. Best of luck to all your future endeavors. Thank you, Chris. You will be missed.
I just want to say that when my mom got hers, it was a plaque, board, gavel, engraving.
Take that gavel with you. We'll give you one gavel.
Thank you. Budgets have changed. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'll miss you guys. And you know, Scott, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have a job here. Because I was on the hiring committee. You remember that?
Yes.
I was on the hiring committee and nobody wanted to hire you except for me. But I managed to sway everyone on the committee.
Well, that's your fault.
Yeah. Think that you were the best.
Let me get you a better certificate. Here, get that one.
Nobody would know that you're cousins.
No, well, I would like to say how much I've enjoyed working with everybody here. Rick, we've had a few meetings. And that I just think that the staff here is amazing. You guys are wonderful to work with. And you just make everything so much easier. And you're constantly trying to do you know, a better job and finding out what we need. So you've added a lot. The city has grown and definitely improved things.
Thanks.
We'll try to take care of it for you.
I know. Tom will be talking to me all the time. So anyway.
Yeah. Best of luck with everything. And come see us when you're back.
I will.
When are you leaving?
The 26th. But I'm keeping my job here. So I'll be around on occasions. Yes.
You'll have, well, after the meeting, up, tell me your plan.
Okay.
off record.
Off record.
Anybody else have anything? Anything? Okay, meeting adjourned. Okay, you guys, I want to give you a piece of trivia about